Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's always my pleasure to welcome IQ Al-Rasuli to the program. IQ is the author of a series of books, Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam, which is a presentation of the of what the Islamic scriptures say, arranged topically. It uses exactly the same sources that are provided in Prophet of Doom, but Prophet of Doom is arranges those sources chronologically and tells the story in chronological order, where IQ Al-Rasuli's research presents the same material, but by topic, which is an equally and sometimes even more valuable way to present information. And so today, IQ, I want you to be in a position to comment on a video that we're going to play for our audience. That video was presented by Fox News. They had no clue how to respond to it. And it shows Muslims screaming Allahu Akbar, which we'll discuss, telling a Christian community in Syria who are non-combatants in this war that they will either have to commit to Islam or they will have their heads cut off. And it shows these Muslim jihadists, these rebels, using anti-aircraft weapons and 50-caliber machine guns and the like to shoot unarmed civilians. Is that a fairly accurate introduction for this film clip that we're going to be listening to, IQ?
I've seen it. Yes, it's correct.
Yeah. All right. It is it's pretty horrendous. What I'd like is our audience to be able to listen to it, IQ, and then I want you to explain why these Muslims are saying this and whether or not they have corrupted their religion to take this position or whether or not this is the core teaching of Islam. Scott, if you could please play the clip for us.
Right now we want to get you back to some breaking news from Syria, where a rebel group with Al-Qaeda-linked militants are warning residents of a Christian village, quote, convert to Islam or face beheading. These rebels have grabbed control of a series of ancient Christian holy sites in the city of Malula, just outside the Syrian capital. Leland Vitter has obtained video that has never been seen on television of these jihadi fighters giving tours of the conquered sites. He joins us now live from our Mideast Bureau with this very, very difficult turn of events in Syria. Leland?
Exactly, Martha. We've already heard that there have been some executions inside Malula, and they are very strategically important villages that the Syrian army has now lost control of. And keep in mind that the jihadis who have taken over these villages, the rebels, have very strong links to Al-Qaeda syndicate groups. So not only do they view the Christians inside, some of the nuns and some of the monks, as heretics, but also as traitors for supporting President Assad's regime.
Once a picturesque pilgrimage site home to centuries-old monasteries, Malula and its history are now the latest victims in Syria's sectarian civil war. One nun said she hid the local orphans in a cave before rebels overran the city's main churches. Now we are in front of this church, and the families of Malula are here and safe. God is great, said a rebel from the back of his pickup. Clearly jubilant rebels gave a video tour of one convent, pockmarked with holes from artillery and filled with shrapnel. These pictures were taken before reports of jihadist rebels lighting the churches ablaze and destroying the religious symbols inside. Reports indicated that most of the village's 3,300 Christians fled the fighting early on, leaving the hillside village a ghost town. But those that stayed faced an uncertain fate at the hands of increasingly extreme rebels, their ranks often filled with foreign fighters looking to turn Syria into an Islamic state. God is great, cried the rebels after a reported 1,500 fighters took the village. As one of their videos ended, automatic weapons fire pierced the air. That is the Assad regime firing on the village, explained the photographer.
It is too early to tell right now if the Syrian army is going to be able to retake this village, but the brutality of the rebels and also their jihadist leanings is setting up an awful choice for a lot of folks, Martha, really between a regime and a dictator who is allegedly willing to gas his own people, or rebels and jihadists on the other side who are willing to behead those that don't give up their Christian faith. Martha, back to you.
So much misery in Syria right now, and that is difficult, difficult options. What an incredible video you brought us, Leland. Thank you very much. Such an important element in this story, what is happening in those Christian communities in Syria right now.
All right, IQ, the first thing I'd like you to comment on is what was witnessed by the video that the rebels, the jihadists, took of their own actions, not unlike the Nazis did in World War II. Was this a turn of events, or has this been the norm?
This has always been the norm, by the way, for people who don't know. When the Turkish government in the 1973 occupied one-third of Cyprus, they depopulated the Christians from there. They destroyed the churches there or converted them to mosques. They have been doing this for 1,400 years. This is nothing new.
Everywhere around the world.
What I'm surprised is that Fox News is surprised.
Yes. They call it a turn of events, surprising video. And yet, this has been the case since the beginning not only of the Syrian Civil War. This has been the case since from the inception of Islam.
Correct. Yes.
All right. Next question that this raises is it spoke of the Syrian army losing control of the town. What that infers, and you have to correct us if we're wrong, that certainly infers that the Syrian army, the Syrian regime, was protecting Christians and that the rebels view the Christians as the enemy.
Absolutely.
Is that
right? Yes. That is correct. For people who are listening, Assad, no matter how bad he is, he protected the Christians because Assad is a secular, not a believing Muslim. He's not a fundamentalist Muslim.
Right.
He was like Saddam Hussein,
right,
who also protected the Christians of Iraq, my country.
Yes. And so for America to take the side of these jihadists against the protector of the Christians, Assad, then we are aiding and abetting genocide on Christians. Is that not the case?
It is the case, but it's something else is going to happen. Those jihadis who came from America and Canada and Europe to fight Assad will return to Europe and America to destroy them.
Of course. Now, the next thing it said is that the Christians were heretics. Is that really the right term, or is there a more correct Islamic term to define the Christians?
Kuffar or kafirun.
Yes.
Even
what does that mean?
Mushriku means to associate with God, the Son of God.
Right. And so the infidel in this particular case, the kafir, which is the most derogatory term wielded by Muslims, that is actually what they're being called. They're being called a very derogatory term, and it's directed especially at Christians who these Muslims have been taught from their Quran are their enemy. Is that correct?
That is correct. This is why in the 21st century, the most persecuted people on the planet are Christians by Muslims. How many times do I have to repeat this?
Yes. Just explain for our listeners, why are the Christians supporting Assad, and are they doing it militaristically, or are they doing it with their words and just their hearts and minds?
They are not militaristic. The Christians in Iraq were not militaristic. The Jews of Iraq were not militaristic. They supported the regime because they prefer to have a regime which is dictatorial than Sharia, which is obscene.
Yeah.
Very simple. It's not complicated.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing as the cops in Egypt.
While
Mubarak was a ruthless dictator, he was a secularist, as was Saddam Hussein, as is Bashar al-Assad. And so with a secular regime, the Christians can live their lives. They're treated like animals in an Islamic country, but they can at least live. Their homes and their churches are not burned, and their children are not raped and murdered. But with a fundamentalist Islamic regime, like the rebels represent and what they wish to do, which is to turn Syria into an Islamic country, then the Christians will be annihilated, won't they?
No question about it. They are annihilating it. Look, it's so simple. It's really, really ridiculous. The Obama administration and your news media. in Iraq. I said that before. In Iraq, in the year 2003, we had 1.3 million Christians. Today, we have less than 200,000 in the country.
Yeah, so America's invasion of Iraq led directly to the annihilation of Christians.
Absolutely right.
Yes. And so America, which is now sending arms directly, not just indirectly, to these jihadists who are using these weapons to kill Christians, will have exactly the same effect, correct?
Yes, but does it make sense? Where is the sense? I don't understand.
Oh, well, you
supply your own enemy who will destroy you in the end. Why? I don't get it.
It's either unbelievably stupid or unbelievably immoral. Several times, the Fox commentators, when you heard Allahu Akbar being shouted in the background, said that Allahu Akbar meant God is great. That's not true, is it?
No, it's not. It means Allah is greater.
Yeah, that's actually a derivative of the complete meaning. Greater is a kind of a derivative meaning. There is a more complete and accurate meaning of Akbar. When an Arabic speaking individual speaks of someone who is Akbar, they have a couple of characteristics that greater is actually a derivative of. Is that correct?
Correct.
What are those?
Akbar means bigger. It means higher. It means larger. It doesn't mean greater. This is my language.
Yeah, I know.
For example, if I were the eldest of a children of a family,
right,
call me Akbar. It doesn't mean
oldest.
I'm greater.
It means you're the oldest. Yes. Now, but if they talk about the sun is bigger than the moon, they would also use Akbar to communicate bigger, correct?
Absolutely right.
So by yelling Allahu Akbar, it's the Islamic prayer of fear. When they first yelled it at the Jewish community in Kabar, Muhammad was saying, "My God is bigger than your God. My God is older than your God."
Yeah. By the way, it's a terror verse.
Of course.
It's called the terror verse. Allahu Akbar is called the terror verse. It is used invariably whenever they slaughter another human being.
Correct. And it is a taunt. Allah wants to be considered bigger than Yahweh.
Any other one?
Yes. Well, there's only one real God. And so Allah, who was modeled after Satan, has this great desire to be considered older, bigger, even greater, if you will, than Yahweh. We'll return with IQ Al-Rasuli after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're on with IQ Al-Rasuli, the foremost expert on the religion of Islam. Now that we have gone through much of the of that video clip that we played in the first segment of this hour, IQ, the next thing I'd like to comment is that they said that they, after committing a number of assassinations, they lit the churches ablaze. Is this common for Muslims to light churches ablaze?
Yes.
Did they do it in Iraq?
The churches are of value. They convert them to mosques.
Right, like the Blue Mosque in Constantinople, which was one of the world's largest cathedrals. They just converted it into a mosque.
Yeah, the Hagia Sophia, obviously.
Yeah, yes.
One of the greatest cathedrals in history.
Yes, they
converted
it
into a mosque. They put Allah and Muhammad on the wall.
Yes,
but
as opposed.
Not the only ones. There are many of them in Syria, especially in Syria. Some of the very oldest churches in the world were converted to mosques, and now these mosques are being destroyed by both sides.
Yeah, and then if you look at the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, when Muslims conquered it, taking it from the Byzantine Christians, what's the first thing they did right on top of where the temple had been?
They built the Dome of the Rock.
Yeah.
Yes,
and then on the other side of the Temple Mount, they built Aqsa Mosque, didn't they?
Yeah.
It is their nature. So, and they've been doing it now for 1,400 years, lighting churches ablaze.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, the only difference, by the way, in this and what they did in Iraq, is in Iraq, they would surround the church and light it ablaze with the Christians inside.
They did that too.
Now, this says that the Christians fled, not all of them. The ones that stayed were assassinated, but they fled. They were not fighting. So these are Islamist jihadists using American weapons to gun down and murder those who are unarmed. Is that correct?
That is correct, but that has been going on for 1,400 years. This is Islam. I don't have
yes.
to repeat it a billion times. This is Islam in operation.
Yeah.
That's it.
It is not a corruption of the religion. It is the religion as it was presented in the Quran and in the Hadith. It says that the rebels were trying to turn Syria into an Islamic state.
Yeah.
What percentage of the of those jihadists that are fighting in the as rebels do you think are fundamentalist Muslims who are jihadists who are screaming Allahu Akbar, whose ultimate goal is to establish Sharia law and establish an Islamic state in Syria? What percentage of the Sunni jihadists?
Well, contrary to your own administration, I'll call it 95%.
By the way, the source that the administration cited, both Kerry and also McClown, the senator from Arizona, the woman who wrote the article for the Wall Street Journal that they cited claimed to have a PhD from Georgetown. Well, she's now been fired from the think tank because she lied about that. And she also lied about the fact that she has direct ties to the jihadists. In other words, all of what she wrote was propaganda, but it was certainly picked up by Secretary of State Kerry and Senator McClown.
Without checking it. This is outrageous.
Right.
Without checking it.
Right. And we know for certain that the largest rebel group in Syria is the al-Nusra Front, means the Victory Front, and that they are a direct derivative. I mean, al-Qaeda doesn't have much of a footprint left anywhere in the world because al-Qaeda really has always been irrelevant. But the one place that al-Qaeda has a footprint is that once America invaded Iraq, al-Qaeda, which was never there previously, all of a sudden emerged in Iraq for the purpose of, well, it was open season on Christians because the American military was there. And so al-Qaeda, through the Islamic State of Iraq, had a presence. And al-Nusra Front is a direct outgrowth of the Islamic State of Iraq. And the leader of al-Nusra Front says specifically that he takes his instructions from Zawahiri, who is the head of al-Qaeda. And that's the dominant aspect of the rebels, is it not?
It is, but why are we complicating it? Every single fundamentalist Muslim, no matter what label he has under, no matter what they call themselves, every single one of them is Al-Qaeda. They're reading exactly the same script.
Well, what you're actually saying is that Al-Qaeda is actually irrelevant because all Al-Qaeda is a manifestation of fundamentalist Islam. And so they're all fundamentalist Muslims, and therefore they all share the Al-Qaeda theology only because Al-Qaeda's theology is fundamentalist Islam. There's no distinction between them.
None whatsoever. None.
Yeah, Al-Qaeda is just a manifestation of the Quran. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about the Syrian civil war. Nothing civil about it, however. And America's tendency to be played for fools by their media and by their politicians. We have IQ Al-Rasuli on the line. There was a statement at the end of this talking about a difficult choice being do we want to side with people who want to behead Christians and who are gunning down an entire town of unarmed individuals, or do we want to side with a dictator willing to gas his own people? IQ, one of the things that just troubles me is how the media and people fall into traps. We don't know who deployed the gas in Syria, at least on the second time the gas was used. The first time, the UN and Russia both collectively proved that it was the rebels who deployed the gas. We don't know if the gas was stolen because the gas sources now are decentralized. We don't know if they're stolen by the rebels and perpetrated by the rebels or perpetrated by an element of the Syrian army who felt threatened And we know that they would feel threatened now because over the last 3 or 4 weeks, the United States, the Qataris, and the Saudi Arabians have radically increased the quantity and caliber of the weapons that they are providing in Syria so that the Syrian forces are no longer able to go into communities on foot. They have to bombard them. But we know for certain that over the past 2 years, of the hundreds of requests that have been made to Assad to use chemical weapons, he has always said no. We have recordings of every one of them, and there is no recording of him changing this time and saying yes. Assad has never been willing in this war to gas his own people because he knows that would be suicidal on his behalf. So why do we say such things? Why do we lie?
Because your administration and the people who are running the show are gunning for war, and I can't figure it out. They're supporting the enemies of the humanity. By the way, terrorism, plunder, death, and destruction are intrinsic sacraments of Islam. Acts of worship of their pagan god Allah, who is actually the alter ego of Satan.
Correct.
I mean, there are no words to describe these people. I would rather have Assad anytime on my side.
Yeah, and Assad, now, mind you, Assad is a thug. He is a horrible human being. He is absolutely repulsive, as was Saddam Hussein. But if your choice is between a repulsive secularist and an Islamist, a Muslim, you're infinitely better off with the thug of a secularist. Look what happened when America deposed Saddam Hussein. What happened? I mean, another 30 people murdered today, women and children. Can you tell me how killing women and children on an everyday basis in marketplaces, in mosques, in just in their communities and homes with suicide bombs is somehow acceptable? And killing women and children with gas is not?
Well, this is the question I asked on many radio interviews. 110,000 Syrians have died in the last 2+ years.
Right.
Obama was quiet. Europe was quiet. Nobody said anything.
Right.
Why 1,300 dead with a gas weapon that nobody can prove that it was Assad in the first place? By the way, the German intelligence service have recordings.
Right.
Exactly what you repeated a few minutes ago.
Yes.
Of Assad refusing permission to use gas warfare weapons.
And not once. Hundreds of times.
Yes.
Unequivocal.
They have recordings.
And they do not have a recording of him changing and saying, oh, yeah, this time I know I said no 100 times in the past, but I'm going to say yes this time. Why not? Let's be suicidal. We know for certain that Assad did not order the attack, and yet he is being presented because as the villain, as the bad guy, because it's easier to fool people when you have a single individual as the enemy. In World War II, it was Adolf Hitler as opposed to Nazism. You know, it was Saddam Hussein as opposed to Islam.
Yeah,
and that is our problem here, is that we think we're in a war against terrorists when, in fact, we're supporting the terrorists. And that the terrorists are nothing but jihadists.
You've been supporting terrorists even in Afghanistan against the Russians. Okay, it was useful at the time. But you created a monster that turned against you. Always,
correct.
People, you create a Frankenstein monster, thinking that you can control it. If you cannot control a Frankenstein monster, it has a life all of its own.
Yeah, we played for our program this week, Friday, a week ago, Zinu Brzezinski telling the jihadists of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda that after America had supplied them with weapons, turning them into a horrible monster, that they should go and invade Afghanistan to go fight against the Soviet-backed government. We created this very monster. We are their source of weaponry. And this notion that the enemy of your enemy is your friend is so grotesquely immoral that now we're engaged in the Syrian civil war. And don't think for a moment that we're not engaged. The weapons that are being deployed are American weapons. We provided the weapons that caused this war to occur. We invaded Iraq, which caused this war to occur. America is solely responsible for igniting this. Now, Islam is the reason that it has continued, but we ignited this fuse. We're responsible for the death of 110,000 people. We're not the solution.
No,
as a matter of fact,
you are the cause of the problem.
We are the cause. America is the cause of the Syrian civil war.
Well,
we ignited it, and we provided the weapons. Now, from that point on, it was, you know...
leadership. Yeah, it's your leadership.
Yes.
It's terrible when you say America, as if all Americans are... It's your leadership.
Who voted for them? Who voted for them?
They should be deposed.
Who voted for them?
Yes, I know, but all you need
who voted
is
51%. Yes.
Yeah, all you need is 51%.
Yeah, but they voted for Bush, who was insane and grotesquely immoral by invading Afghanistan and Iraq in wars that made bad situations worse, and a similar percentage voted, but the other half of the country voted for Obama, who has now lit the fuse on this Islamic reformation that has swept through the Middle East, transforming so many countries and making them vastly worse than they were before. And so if you look at the 51% that elected George Bush and the 51% that elected Obama, it's pretty hard to exclude many Americans from being responsible.
True. Yes. When you think about it, that's what you're
right. Yeah. And the only the only hope, and there is hope right now. We're at a window of hope where your message and my message, which is the same message, can resonate, which is that two-thirds of Americans know that we were counterproductive in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we ought not engage in another Islamic war because there is no chance that something good will happen, and there is every probability that something bad will happen. So two-thirds of Americans, for the first time, are willing to set aside patriotism and militarism to say, no, don't do that in my name. I don't want you to do it.
But I want 100% of Americans to think about this. Why is it always America which has to interfere? Why aren't the Arabs interfering? It's their baby. They are the ones who are arming the Al-Qaeda group, and the other side, the Persians are arming this opposite group, which is Shia. Let them settle the account. Why should it be always America? America went to save Kuwait. Kuwait promised at the time that they will liberalize. They didn't liberalize.
Of course not. You know,
Putin... have democracy. They don't have... You cannot have democracy under Islam.
Why it's impossible.
Is it so difficult for the human mind in America to accept such simple facts? I can't figure it out.
What does Islam mean in Arabic?
Submission.
Right. Can you have democracy, which is choice, when people are forced to submit?
Islam is the nemesis of democracy.
Of course.
It is the opposite of democracy. To talk about democracy in Islam is an oxymoron. It's a contradiction in terms.
And every good Muslim knows that.
I cannot understand why Americans find it so difficult to accept such simple realities.
So when they...
What, 12 years, 14 years?
12 years, of course. Now, so when the jihadists say that they're fighting for democracy in Egypt and in Syria, are they using that slogan in hopes that they'll get America to supply them with weapons? Or are they actually trying to create a free and open democratic society?
They can't. They know they can't. They're fooling Americans by saying democracy. The word democracy, by the way, just for your information, there is no equivalent in the Arabic language to the concept of democracy.
Yeah.
This is why they use in Arabic al-demokratiya, which is the bastardization of the Greek language, democracy.
Yeah.
The concept of democracy does not exist in Islam. Islam exists only under Sharia, and Sharia is the nemesis of everything that a human being would like to have in life. It is the exact opposite. That's why Muslims behave like zombies.
Right.
They are the living dead. They prefer to be dead than to be alive. And when we kill them in self-defense, they accuse us of being aggressors.
Yeah. When the Quran has a statement that completely eliminates any possibility of democracy in an Islamic country, and it says that when Allah has chosen your religion, there is no choice.
Of course there is no choice. In Islam, there is no choice.
That's right.
None.
Allah has chosen the religion for you, therefore there is no choice. That's impossible to have democracy under those circumstances.
Yeah,
not with Islam.
We're discussing about Islam and Christianity. You remember we discussed once a charter of Umar?
Mm-hmm.
You remember? Do you know what it is, the charter of Umar?
Go ahead.
Okay. Before I reveal the dastardly Quranic verses regarding Islam's perception of Christians and Christianity, I would like to reveal to our listeners how Islamic Sharia law deals with Christians based upon the Charter of Umar. Now, it is so important to have this in mind. The subject starts, we heard, it's a report. The following is from Al-Turtushi. His book is Siraj al-Muluk, pages 229 to 230. I'm giving you all the details. It says, when Umar ibn al-Khattab, may Allah be pleased with him, accorded a peace to the Christians of Syria. We're against Syria. This is 1400 years ago. Nothing has changed. We wrote to him as follows. In the name of Allah, the merciful and compassionate, this is a letter to the servant of Allah, Umar ibn al-Khattab, commander of the faithful, from the Christians of such and such a city. When you came against us, we asked you for safe conduct, aman, for ourselves, our descendants, our property, and the people of our community.
Hang on one second, IQ.
Obligations towards you.
IQ, we're going to return to this quotation after the commercial break.
Listen to the rules imposed upon Christianity. It says, so the Christians have to tell the Muslims, we shall not build in our cities or in their neighborhoods new monasteries, churches, convents or monk cells, nor shall we repair by day or by night such of them as fall in ruins or are situated in the quarters of the Muslims. We shall keep our gates wide open for passers-by and travelers, that is for Muslims. We shall give board and lodging to all Muslims who pass our way for 3 days. We shall not give shelter in our churches or in our dwellings to any spy, nor bide him from the Muslim. We shall not teach the Quran to our children. We shall not manifest our religion publicly, nor convert anyone to it. We shall not prevent any of our kin from entering Islam if they so wish. We shall show respect towards the Muslims, and we shall rise from our seats when they wish to sit. We shall not seek to resemble the Muslims by imitating any of their garments, their turbans, their footwear, or the parting of the hair. We shall not speak as they do, nor shall we adopt their surnames. We shall not mount on saddles, nor shall we gird swords, nor bear any kind of arms, nor carry them on our persons. We shall not engrave Arabic inscriptions on our seals. We shall not sell fermented drinks. We shall clip the front of our heads. And it goes on and on and on.
Total surrender.
This is submission, this is humiliation, this is degradation. This is Islam, and this is Sharia.
Stunning. In the Quran, the transition that takes place in the last two surahs that were allegedly revealed, the ninth followed by the fifth. Muhammad had overhunted Jews. He had raped every Jewish woman within camel ride of Yathrib, today's Medina. He had enslaved every Jewish child within camel ride of Yathrib. He had murdered every Jewish man within camel ride of Yathrib, and he had robbed every Jewish family of their possessions. And so he needed a fresh meat, new prey. And so the entire purpose of the last two surahs of the Quran were to redefine the nature of Allah's and Islam's enemy. And 100% of the disgusting prose that is found in the ninth and the fifth surahs of the Quran change all of the edicts that were labeled against the Jews, authorizing Muslims to terrorize them, to rape them, to rob them, all of which are dictated and defined in the Quran, are now directed directly at Christians. And so when those Muslims started to gun down with American weapons that Christian community, they were following the edicts that were laid out in the ninth and fifth surah. Is that an accurate statement, IQ?
100% accurate. I mean, how can anybody dispute it? It's there. You cannot be disputed. This is why nobody will take your challenge, nor can anybody take my challenge. I've had challenges worth millions of dollars. Not a single human being has come against me to take them. Nobody can take your challenges either. Why? Because we deal with facts, we deal with reality. The most important thing is we deal with knowledge. And the knowledge is the four horsemen of the apocalypse of Islam.
Correct. And the Quran, throughout the particularly the fifth and the ninth surah, it demeans Christianity. It goes after Christians and said, you know, every aspect of your religion is false. And so you are absolutely destined to burn in hell. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, in fact,
30-40 verses in both chapters.
Yeah, in fact, they actually have a misnomer. Yahusha is the name of the Messiah. They have him named Esau in the Quran, don't they?
Which is the wrong one.
Yeah, well, of course, because Esau is an Arabic transliteration of Esau, which is one of the two people that Yahweh called out by name to say, I hate him. He went off and married Ishmael's daughters and adopted the religion of Ishmael. And so when the Quran says that Jesus is one of our prophets, they didn't even get his name right in the Quran, and yet the Quran has the letters, because they're all Hebrew letters, they're derivatives of Hebrew letters, to write Yahusha, but chose not to. Renamed him Esau. And doesn't the Quran say that their Esau, whom they now claim is Jesus, was an Islamic prophet, and he called people to Allah?
Yes, of course. All the Hebrew prophets were calling the Israelites to Allah. All of them.
Yeah, yeah, and of course,
even Moses.
Yeah, and of course, they claim that the Christians and the Jews hid all of these revelations that Muhammad came down with through his Quran, which are the antithesis of what they said. They said that they actually hid this and removed them from their scriptures so that they could thwart Allah and Muhammad. Is that not true?
Yes. The question is, when I ask Muslims to prove their point by showing us the uncorrupted Bibles,
right,
they say they don't have any.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it was a Muslim boy who stumbled into the caves of Qumran that found the Dead Sea Scrolls, that found scrolls that were written 800 years before Islam was invented, that shows that the Torah and the prophets and the Psalms didn't contain Islamic material, proving that Muhammad lied, correct?
Correct. Like, and the Quran never says, not once does the Quran say that the Jews and the Christians perverted anything of their Bible. Nowhere in the whole of the Quran will you find any assertion that the Jews and the Christians perverted their Bible. It says that some Christians and some Jews twisted the meaning, which is fair enough. It can be done. Otherwise, how would Muhammad say to his followers, if you don't believe me, go to the people of the book, who will confirm what I'm telling you?
Yeah. Muhammad claimed that, of course, that his Quran confirmed the Torah, the prophets, and what he has a corruption Injil of the Evangelion. And in fact, his message is the antithesis of them. And so, how is it possible that that which is wholly contradictory can confirm?
Well, simple. Because Allah never revealed anything to Muhammad. Because Allah is Satan. Because Allah never... Because every single letter in the Quran, every word, every chapter, every verse, was the product of Muhammad's imagination, the secretions of his mind. Nobody revealed anything to him. He said he talked to the angel Gabriel. Nobody ever heard him.
Yes.
Nobody ever saw him. Nobody ever heard... I mean, his wife, Aisha, who's slept with him, in the so-called the night that he went to Jerusalem, she said he never went to Jerusalem. He slept with me that night and he stayed with me. It was a spiritual transport.
And so here's 1.5 billion people who have been beguiled into believing that the most repulsive man who ever lived, a man who orally presented through recitals the most repulsive book in human history, which would be the Quran. And they are willing to kill one another and everyone else on the planet based upon this rapist, this slave trader, this avowed liar. Why is it that so many people are willing to kill on behalf of this moron?
Because they have been indoctrinated since the day they were born, that they are superior to every human being because they believe in Muhammad and Allah. The name Muhammad is used by almost every single family which is Muslim in the world. If you look at the list of Muhammads in America or Europe, every single family has got a name Muhammad. The most repulsive person that ever walked the earth, but that is exactly what they have.
So we're fighting, the world is combating the most heinous, deadly, despicable, destructive, damning religion that has ever been conceived, one based upon the lusts of a rapist, of a terrorist, of a slave trader, of a pedophile. What is wrong with us that we can't condemn it?